Well, Daniele, not only do we get a 5-0 Blue Jays win, they now improve to 26-3 when they score 5 or more runs. The bullpen day headlined by certainly Trevor Richards and Baden Francis, but 6 Blue Jays relievers all looking pretty good against a potent Guardian lineup. But hey, a double win for you today.
Yes!
Azuri surviving an early scare at the Euro. So they went, no bad vibes on Jays Talk is what I'm saying today.
So I couldn't even make it my way over to the press box before the first goal happened. And I look at my phone and you're texting like, uh-oh. It was like, what a start for your boys. And another couple other people messaging, what's going on with your boys? Relax. They're fine, Joe. Everything's good. Winning edition of Jays Talk coupled by an Azuri victory. Are you kidding me? Terrific recipe for a Saturday afternoon here in the city of Toronto. I'm sure it's buzzing in Little Italy. Buzzing here today at the ballpark show. Offense was came alive a little bit.
Yeah.
And the pitching, as you already kind of alluded to, was excellent. I was extremely impressed with Baden Francis in particular. I thought he was awesome. And timely hitting today, which was obviously really positive, encouraging, refreshing to see after some of the things that we've endured with this ball club throughout the first couple, you know, what are we now? Two and almost a half months into the season here.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line, Daniele, is always open, as everyone knows. Why don't we continue talking about the pitchers while we wait for the phone lines to fill up here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, okay, I want to actually start by talking about Trevor Richards just because he kind of started the game for us. But we'll certainly get to Baden Francis and the rest of these guys. But Richards came out in this game, and you and I talked about this on the pregame show. And, I mean, everyone expects this. This is not exactly like the hardest hitting analysis that, like, you know, he's going to throw a lot of changeups. He throws that's like his biggest pitch, essentially, right? And like I said to you earlier, the shape of the changeup is so downwards. Like, it's so north-south,
12
right?
To 6.
Yeah, it's great to watch. And then he comes out, and the top of the first inning just pumps fastballs. He's just throwing fastball after fastball.
I know.
And he was fairly efficient. He actually came back out for the third inning. So he gets just the one batter. And I understand why they lifted him because, you know, he'd thrown 31 pitches at that point. And he probably could have been pushed a little bit more, but knowing the kind of weapons they had in the bullpen, I didn't hate it, even though we knew we weren't going to see Baden Francis right away. And, of course, we did see other lefties before we got to Baden Francis. But I got to say, 2 innings and a third, one hit, no runs or walks, 31 pitches. He had one strikeout as well. Trevor Richards, again, fairly efficient. Not a lot to complain about, really, from any of the bullpen relievers today, but I was really impressed with what we got from Richards. I thought Tim Mayza, I mean, he allowed 2 hits, basically around 1 out.
It was tough.
It was tough because he faces 3 batters, 9, 1, and 2, essentially. Mm-hmm. So Bo Naylor, Stephen Kwan, Andres Jimenez. So all lefties. And then as soon as David Fry came up, he was lifted, right? And Kwan and Jimenez did get aboard at that point with singles. So I think that does tell you a teensy bit about the leash for Mayza at this point in the season. Like, it's short, right?
There's none.
Like, they were not rolling the dice, especially with a righty batter, especially with guys on base at that point.
Oh, 100%. First things first, it's difficult to be effective, consistently effective as a reliever, and especially a lefty specialist, when you're throwing 91 or 92 with the fastball.
Yeah.
And like, it's just hard, man. Because in this game, and as we see, and we saw it last night in particular with this Cleveland bullpen, the amount of velocity coming out of the back end amongst those high leverage relievers, that's what you typically see. And I do think, although, and I will say, you know, Cleveland's not an AL East opponent, but Tim Mayza, there's a lot of mileage there in a very difficult division. And being in the American League East, being in even the American League for the entirety of his career up until this point, and the amount of work he's actually shouldered, it's difficult.
Sure.
After a while, teams are going to kind of get a book on you. And so right now, he's sort of fighting it. And again, if he had 95, 96 that he could routinely sort of pop in there, it would help a lot. I did think in the moment, sure, I got to admit, because, mind you, in the third, they're coming off a three spot in the second.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, there's two outs. If anything, because you and I talked about this in the pregame where we said if they go, they're probably want to break up the righty-righty bullpen combination by inserting a lefty or two coming out of the pen. That is ideally what they'd like to do to see how to make at least Stephen Voigt and company have to juggle and weigh the pros and cons of saying we're a lefty heavy lineup today. Are we going to stick with that? Are we going to make any adjustments when the lefty comes in? So that is part and parcel what went on here. But I did think I was stunned. I do think the fact that he only got to face three batters, the minimum, tells you all you need to know about the level of confidence and faith that they have in him right now, which understandably is low because he has not been good, but it was very instructive in terms of what like we can glean, because look at the spot that they put him in. Up 3-0,
yep.
Right? In early leverage, like in like low leverage early in the ball game, and they still decided to yank him after back-to-back singles. Not even hard-hit balls. Singles, right? We're not extra base hits or anything. It was just back-to-back singles after he recorded an out. There were two outs in the inning. They said, no, we're not messing with this. We're gonna make that decision. And ultimately, it worked out. He was one of the six that combined for the shutout, their fifth of the season. Overall, really good pitching performance. That was an interesting spot for sure in the third inning there.
We got to see Zach Pop as well. And Zach Pop literally threw one pitch today.
That was it.
One pitch, one out. He did not return for the next inning. So good for Zach Pop. He did his job. And then Ben Francis came out for the fourth inning, and he got a fair bit of work, as we knew he would. But I think that was a question for me as to how much work he would actually see, because, you know, he's had a bit of an up-and-down season. It's a lefty-heavy lineup. But
yeah.
Caleb talked about this during the game with Ben. Watching his pitch mix today, and certainly he was able to hit the four-seamer up to about 95.5 miles an hour, so that looked pretty lively. That was pretty great. He mixed in a fair bit of curveballs. I loved watching him use the splitter.
Oh,
and,
same here.
And I got to say, that Baden Francis added a splitter in the offseason. Like, of all pitches, too. Not just, like, he didn't just add a pitch. He added a splitter, which is notoriously difficult to throw and for the catchers to corral, essentially. Mm-hmm. But you know, you often hear from pitchers, and I mean, you have done this too, but we've talked to pitchers on different shows on the network over the years, and, you know, you hear pitchers say, oh, yeah, I'm going to add, like, this pitch, I'm going to add that pitch, and they make it sound somewhat easy, but the few athletes I've spoken to usually say that it doesn't amount to much because everyone says they're going to do it, and you know, no one, you know, you do it a little bit, and it doesn't work out for you.
Exactly.
You go back to what works.
Yeah.
But Baden Francis committed to adding the splitter to his repertoire, his arsenal. He's using it in games pretty effectively. He's throwing it decently hard. He's throwing it in the right counts. He's throwing it to the right parts of the plate.
Yep.
And I got to say, we'll have to see how he continues to use it and how he fares and how he plays it well every 5 days. But I don't know, that's a real weapon for him. Like, that allowed him, along with the curveball and along with the velo on the fastball, certainly. Like, a lot of things had to go right for him today. But it helped on a day where he was facing a lot of very lefty heavy batters here, and it was fun to watch because he went deeper than I don't want to say deeper than I thought, but certainly went deep enough to help out the bullpen even on a day where they still use six relievers.
Yeah, no. First, I mean, plain and simple, he was really impressive. That was an awesome outing, very encouraging, especially after. And I was in the ballpark for this show. He was brought up, obviously, in the aftermath of Manoah being shut down. And I think it was literally on the day we had we sort of found out that he was probably going to be gone for a while. This is before they officially made the announcement ahead of the Oakland series that, you know, hey, he's going to have surgery.
Right.
Nevertheless, he gets promoted back up onto this main roster coming off the IL. And he looked really rough against Baltimore. And I think I even said it to you in passing in one of our conversations at work at the studio, where I said, man, if he's leaning on the curveball as his best secondary pitch, he's in trouble. Because it's not enough of a plus curveball to be an effective out pitch. So what did he do today instead? He used the splitter as that big out pitch for him. And it worked wonders. I was amazed and really, really impressed with how effective he was, because based on the body of work that we've seen from him this year, because, mind you, he broke he broke camp as the starter, the fifth starter.
Yeah, that's true.
Today, I thought, was more of a it was closer to the version of Bowden Francis that we saw in spring training in the Grapefruit League, where he earned himself that fifth starter spot. I thought today, the guy that was standing on that mound and pitching, who shoved four innings of shutout baseball, was closer in resembling the pitcher that we saw during the spring. And to me, that is a massive positive, because even as you said, the fastball had extra life today, but throughout this stretch that we've seen him up until this point, the splitter was essentially his fourth pitch.
Yeah, it's true.
He wasn't utilizing it a ton. It was he used the slider even more. And today he only threw three sliders. We're talking about how effective he was at attacking the strike zone. He threw 68 pitches today. 40 of them were in the strike zone. So he was all around the strike zone all day, challenging hitters, being in command, really dictating the terms of engagement. And I thought that was an impressive outing, and I couldn't agree more. The splitter, to me, is what really, really defined the success he had today in his outing.
So knowing that Yariel Rodriguez is probably going to return by the time we get to the next, like, start number five, let's call it, of the rotation, right? Because tomorrow, things turn over. We're going to get Berríos, Kikuchi, Bassett, Gausman. So that's four games. That takes you through to the off day, essentially. So one game tomorrow, three games against the Red Sox. Takes you to the off day on Thursday. So Friday, in theory, that would line you up for another quote-unquote bullpen day, right?
Correct.
And that game would be number one, I believe, in Cleveland at Progressive Field. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Yariel Rodriguez is back by then, and let's assume for the sake of this conversation that he is, okay? So let's say he's back by next Friday, and you have Y-Rod as your nominal fifth starter.
Yeah.
And he's not stretched out yet. They've talked a lot about he needs to be stretched out to 80 pitches. Let's say he's not quite there yet. Do you feel okay if Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis, like they did before, it's not like we haven't seen this before.
We've seen it.
But they go back to the idea of piggybacking Y-Rod and Bowden, and then you kind of work from there. You try and get, maybe you get 3 1/3 from one, maybe get 3 1/3 from another. And today they got four from Bowden, mm-hmm. so maybe that's what you can get from him going forward. Like you said, 68 pitches. So, you know, I think the most he's thrown in a game this season, albeit in a unfortunate game for him, which was when he got rocked in Houston, but he still threw 79 pitches in that game. So let's say he's getting back up to about there, which would be 11 more pitches than he threw today. You okay with that? Like, you okay with that for your quote-unquote fifth starter?
Definitely, definitely. I do think in bigger picture here, I do hope we get to a point where Yariel Rodriguez is able to be deployed as a traditional starter, in the sense that it's not about him being efficient and having a pitch limit on and seeing how deep he can go, but rather he can throw 100 pitches and get you into the sixth at the very least every time out. I hope we get to that point, Joe.
Right, right.
Because based on everything that we've heard from the team, from John Schneider, from anybody around this organization, they clearly are being very cautious with Yariel Rodriguez. I get it. It's understandable and justified given the fact that he didn't pitch last year. That being said, I do think it causes some problems if this is going to be a consistent trend to where, you know, we're five starts deep from the time he returns and we're still in this position, this holding pattern where they're monitoring his pitch count, and then Bowden Francis has to piggyback. What I think really complicates it a little bit with Yariel Rodriguez, as opposed to like Trevor Richards and the way he's being deployed,
right,
is in theory, you let's say he's got a 75 pitch count limit for his first couple outings, that might take you into the fourth. Then you're going to go to Bowden Francis. What type of work is he going to get? Like, how? It's not a scenario where, you know, like Trevor Richards is only going 2/3.
No, I know
two and
mean.
A
yeah,
third,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like today. So I think that is where, and on top of that, as they've already demonstrated on a couple different occasions, it's clear that they want to be very strategic in how they deploy a lefty in between those guys if the opportunity presents itself. So where does the work come in for Bowden Francis? Where's the work going to come? I just think if he's as good as he was today, you got to find that opportunity, man, because he looked like a different pitcher today. Very simply, he looked like a completely different arm out there today. Made big pitches. Even when he did have traffic on the bases, he got out of jams. He looked excellent, in command, And I'm eager to see him step on the mound yet again as soon as humanly possible, possibly, as you put it, piggybacking off of Yariel Rodriguez. At the very least, I think that's where they start. That is probably where they start.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell here until maybe another 20 minutes or so, 20, 30 minutes. So give us a call. Those are the numbers to call, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Let's go to the text line, Daniele. Yeah. Kevin from Toronto says, man, Barger looks like he could be an elite third baseman defensively. Kevin also asks, who goes down when Weyrod is back? So my first thought for who goes down when Rodriguez comes back is probably Brandon Little. I think he's probably the most immediate candidate because I'm looking at the – like, they usually like, – it's not always the case, right? But they feel like they usually make, like, pitcher-for-pitcher substitutions and, you know, not again, so, not always, certainly, right? But, I mean, and I said this to you earlier, but I like what we've seen from Brandon Little.
I agree.
But, you know, if Little's not the guy, I mean
– can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
What are the chances it's Tim Mazza?
Does he have any options?
I doubt he has options.
He has the DFA,
just saying,
right?
Yeah, but looking at it, you're going to subtract.
That'd be tough.
Like, Brandon Little's been fine. He's been fine.
Right,
it's almost entering territory where the territory of we can't use you. Like, they're trying to find the lowest leverage, most comfortable spots to throw him right now.
Yeah.
Like, they're not excited about the possibility or of the prospect of putting him on the mound. So I don't know. That's a difficult decision. I get it. I just wonder about that a little bit. My default would be in agreement with you, where I'd say probably Brandon Little. But I don't know. Tim Mazza, I don't know. I don't see any of the righties going down.
No, I agree.
Right?
Like, it's a Pearson, Richards, Francis. You're not sending any of those guys down. I mean, I guess you could send Pearson down, but I'm not sure what that would accomplish. Pop has been pretty good, honestly. And then you're not sending Chad Green or Jimmy Garcia down, right? I think, you know, it kind of further complicates it to a certain extent, because at some point, I don't know when, but at some point, Eric Swanson's going to have to come back up, we think. And now again, like, last year, Zach Pop went down and did not come back up for the remainder of the year, right? So, like, I suppose that's possible, but I would think that generally you're going to see Eric Swanson up in the majors at some point. So, like, in theory, you're kind of looking at two guys. So I kind of wonder if just, like, either way, it'll be Mazza and Little. You know what I mean? Like, if it's Rodriguez and Swanson that come back eventually, obviously Weyrod more imminently. I kind of wonder if you just maybe to avoid having to make a decision, you will have to send both of them. Oh, and Romano's has to come back at some point as well.
That's right.
So
Romano,
you're actually going to have to make a bunch of these decisions. So maybe Nate Pearson eventually goes anyways, but
it does change
the calculus as to, like, who goes. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. I also think part of their decision-making process would have to involve how many lefties do we want to carry? Are we comfortable carrying just one? Like,
that's
or
true.
Do you want to?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, do you want some flexibility there? Because what if Yenesis Cabrera pitches on consecutive days? And then you don't have him. Like, then you don't have a lefty.
Yeah.
So I get it. Like, baseball's changed in the sense of they're not every team is stockpiled with quality lefty relievers out there. But they're kind of vital. Like, they are vital. They're specialists for a reason. And they're unique and important to have. So I'd be curious. Yeah, Romano even. I didn't even consider that. But you're thinking Rodriguez, Romano, if Swanson gets back to a point where he can return, they're going to have some difficult decisions to make as it relates to this bullpen, for sure.
I do wonder about Mazza, because it's not as though we've seen the team be afraid to make a tough decision. We literally just saw them DFA Kevin Biggio, right? Mm-hmm. And Kevin Biggio and Tim Mazza probably in the same relative boat, in the sense that maybe we've seen all there is to see at this point. And I do think relievers are a little different, because pitchers can perform adequately to very good deeper into their careers, and so can batters, certainly. I'm not trying to, like, disparage one position over the other, but I just think, knowing that, I feel like you can make different sort of calculations based on who you need and who you don't need. But I mean, you would have to DFA Mazza, which is tough, right? Because, like you said, then if you're not sending down, or if you do end up sending down Little, you'd be left with only Cabrera. I think he's pitched well enough over the last month or so that he's not going to go down. You could send him down. I think he has options, but I don't think you will. So that's tough. But then again, if it does depend on how well Yariel Rodriguez is playing. And, I mean, he is going to come back up, but it does make it pretty interesting. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's see. I see a text here. I'll have to pass this along to our pal Caleb. This text is just, love when Caleb Joseph is the wingman. So that's always some good fun. It is always fun to be sitting next to Caleb here in the booth. I don't know if you heard this part of the broadcast. I know you were in the press box, but there was a part where he called Brian Rocchio Pinocchio. not on purpose, but I think the ball was poked out to Rocchio, and I think he kind of amalgamated those two words, which is pretty great.
That's
so
great.
No, Caleb's the man. Love hanging out with Caleb. Anthony from Orangeville, where is Joey Votto, and what is the plan with him? So this, I don't know if there's been another update on this since June 12th was the last time we heard an update. It was from John Schneider himself. He said this to the media. So this is on Wednesday of this past week. So I'm going to read you a tweet, Anthony, from Shai Davidi. And Shai tweeted this out on Wednesday, probably Wednesday afternoon. Joey Votto is, quote-unquote, getting pretty close to playing in minor league games, end quote, says John Schneider. Another quote, he's been doing everything in terms of base running, hitting live BPs, feeling good. I think you'll see him into some games very, very soon. And that sounds like, and I think by some games, he's talking about the Bisons, right? He's talking about the minor league.
Yeah,
so that feels like pretty likely we'll see that. I mean, if very, very soon is hard to really like differentiate it or parse out. But like I'm going to say very, very soon is like in the next couple of weeks.
I mean, I guess... Yeah, it depends how much you believe what's being said.
That's
there,
also true.
Right?
Yes,
like,
yes.
How much of it is just a sales job versus what is substance? I think there's a long road there, though, for Joey Votto because, you know, he was ramping up and had an awesome moment in spring training where in his first game, hits a homer off of Zach Wheeler. And you're thinking, oh, boy, here we go. Even if he doesn't break camp with the team, probably going to arrive very shortly into the regular season. Very early in the regular season, and then we don't hear from him at all for months on end. And so it's kind of bizarre. I'm sure he will pop up at some point, but I'm kind of not holding my breath on this one, show. I want to see it first, and I want to see it for a stretch. Like, I don't want him to just come up and he's going to be in Buffalo, or I think probably Buffalo is the most likely destination, for a week, and then he's back with the big club. I don't know that that's... I don't see the benefit of that right now. Especially, wouldn't you, you know, with respect, guys like Horwitz and Schneider and Clement and Barger, who we saw today, like, you know, does it make sense to take at-bats away from those guys for Joey Votto in some respect? Like, you have to consider those things, I think.
I mean, I probably wouldn't mind seeing Joey Votto instead of, like, Justin Turner, maybe, but
I agree with that.
But you'd have to effectively,
there's no,
like, you'd have to cut someone. So, not even Justin Turner, but someone would have to go because, again, Joey Votto's not on the 40-man. So, someone has to be cut from the 40-man in order for you to add Joey Votto. And really, of the position players right now, if it's not Justin Turner, it effectively has to be Ernie Clement, because he doesn't have any options, right? Because, like you could send guys down, but in order to clear a spot on the 40-man, not on the active roster, but on the 40-man.
Just to add him.
Yeah, just to add him. You have to make some kind of roster move. So I will be interested to see what happens when he does come back. But, again, I think we're still far enough away from seeing Votto playing that it's not an imminent decision. I suppose he could also be – he's also spent quite a fair amount of time in Florida, you know, with the minor leagues in terms of, like, working with the player development complex and so on, that I wouldn't be shocked if, just to get him back in a rhythm, he starts with, like, the Dunedin Blue Jays, and then he goes to the Bisons probably, like, even days after.
Correct.
And then you go from there, because they don't mind doing that, right? It's not quite the same as, like, we're rebuilding him from scratch. It's not quite that, but just to get him back into a rhythm before putting him into, like, semi-meaningful minor league games.
That's a great point, because they did this with Manoah last year as he was sort of on that tour of trying to recapture some semblance of what he used to be and figure things out a little bit. They had him pitch in the Florida Complex League to start and then gradually progress. But and also, just from an organizational standpoint, doing that, or even like single A Dunedin, makes a lot of sense, because you're going to keep him actually geographically in a location where he's going to have access to all the facilities,
sure,
he's going to have
right.
all the resources that the beautiful Florida complex provides. And then when and you're right, probably plays a handful of games down there, and then we'll get moved up to AAA to where you're now saying, okay, show us what you got. And if you happen to perform well, we'll then progress you to maybe getting back on a major league field and on the Blue Jays roster at this particular point in time. I think you're right in sort of your assessment of what that process might entail. I am curious, and maybe it'll sort itself out.
Yeah.
I am just overall curious as to what that fit might be at this point. I think everybody pointed to, like, Vogelbach as being that, like, obvious replacement. But now that that's sort of gone and they've got some different guys up here, younger guys that I think everybody wants to see play, it just leaves you questioning where that playing time is going to come from for a guy like Joey Votto if he happens to make his way back here.
Well, you already have used the Vogelbach chip that's been spent.
Yep.
You can no longer use that one for the one-to-one Votto move, so it will be interesting if that does come soon here. Let's take a couple more texts before we hit a break here. Still some time to give us a call if you like. I see a text here from Giacomo from Windsor just says, hey, great work, boys. Danielle Ian Show. Thank
Giacomo.
You. Thank you, man.
Legend.
David from
Legend.
Dartmouth says, a good win on a sunny Saturday at home in front of a sellout crowd. Mm-hmm. And that is what makes Blue Jays fans stand and cheer. Absolutely. Hey, I felt for the people who were here yesterday who only got to see the one run. But today, people were, you were actually here as a fan yesterday.
Hand up.
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
that's right.
Hand up.
So you and the other, 38,000 people that were here yesterday. Yesterday, a tough time, but the people that were here, and it was jammed today. It was absolutely packed, and it's Father's Day tomorrow. I got to expect it probably pretty busy here tomorrow as well. So I'm happy the people down here got to see something that they felt good about cheering for. Baden Francis ending his day with a strikeout, right? That was really cool. Mm-hmm. Nate Pearson did let a guy get on base and then said in the very next batter, rung up a guy in 99 miles an hour to get the guy swinging. So I thought it was fun to see in terms of them filling up the ballpark today. I see a question from Kevin in Toronto as well. Last question, but how come they didn't call up Aurelvis Martinez knowing they were going to face two lefties this series? You know, that is a good question because he does mash lefties. He hits very well against lefties. Hits less well, let's call it, against righties, although he's hitting like 249, 250 against righties. He had a bit of a rough stretch in the last month, but he's picked it up in the last couple of weeks, I would say. I still think the reason they have not called up Aurelvis Martinez is simply because, they don't really...
You don't think they're convinced?
It's not that I don't think they're convinced, because his power is real.
It's
right.
Real. The power
it's
real.
Clearly real. Like his power is almost effortless, I would say.
Yeah.
It's all the other stuff, because I've said this before, but when it comes to Aurelvis, he's made enough errors, I think, at second base that I think it does make you question for a team that very highly prizes run prevention and defense. And I have said this before as well, that I think we're getting to the point where the rubber meets the road as to, like, how much more can you really prize run prevention and defense if you're not scoring runs, right? So, like, there's a breaking point. And I know a lot of fans would say, we're at that breaking point. We're long past the breaking point. I think a lot of people would say that. But at the same time, I do wonder if, ultimately, if he's not going to play every day as a young guy, because he's like 22 years old, versus Horwitz, for example, who's 26 years old. Barge is a little bit younger. But 22-year-old Aurelvis Martinez, who makes a fair bit of errors despite the power, if he's not playing every day, I think I personally, and I'm sure the Blue Jays think this way too, would rather have him just play every day in the minors.
Yeah.
See what you continue to work on there, not from a power perspective, and certainly you work on your hitting, but from a defensive perspective as well, because you already have a logjam at second base. Like, I mean, you already have a whole bunch of guys like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Now you have Addison Barger. David Schneider, certainly. You have IKF. You have all these different guys, that Ernie Clement certainly as well. You have all these guys who can play like one or two positions that Aurelvis also plays. So I think that's the only reason why, I would say personally. Not because I think they think he's bad by any means. It's just he's probably too young to come up here and be an everyday DH. You want to see more from that, from him in the field. So I just think there are a lot of factors as to why he has not gotten called up. Doesn't mean he won't get called up this year, but just with all the other guys you need to see a little bit more from who are a little bit older, they can probably, run out the clock a teensy bit more on Aurelvis.
If they're in the business of winning, show. I think, look, I hate to put it this way. I do think there's patience being exercised in some areas as it relates to this ball club. Aurelvis is one of them. If they're in the business of winning and they are in a position to be a playoff team, which, again, I don't necessarily see that happening, but I think it would be ultimately malpractice for them to hold him back and keep him down in the minors for the majority of the season if they are truly in the business of winning. Because guess what they need? They need to score some runs, right? There reaches a point, and you alluded to it, where you need to sort of bite your tongue on things and turn a blind eye in some areas in order to try and help your team where it desperately requires some reinforcements, that being on the offensive side of the ball. I think, and I'm with you, I think the reason we haven't seen him yet is twofold to me. One is the defense. They were adamant about this even with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when he was coming up through the minor league system, and everybody talked about how by the time he was in Double A, he would have been suitable enough to play. He was good enough to play in the major leagues and hit in the major leagues. I think the defense is a real concern. They don't want to put him out there and have him, you know, commit an error every five games. That's not in the cards as far as they're concerned. And secondarily is the playing time. Like, if they're going to make that move, just like they did with Spencer Horwitz, with David Schneider coming up last year, with Addison Barger, they want to ensure that there's going to be an avenue to consistent, regular playing time. That is what is best for the development of that player. Aurelvis Martinez is not going to be a guy that's going to hit 270, 280 show. But what you're hoping for is he is essentially going to be the embodiment of what modern Major League Baseball is. A guy that's going to hit 30 homers, tons of power, but will probably hit 230, and hopefully he drives in runs. That's essentially what you're hoping for. Guess what, though? On this team, you gladly sign up for that, and they could use a player like that who can hit the ball out of the ballpark on any given pitch. That's something they sorely miss and are lacking, and it would help them in a big way.
We got a couple of texts here before we hit a break.
Yes.
On the 40-man, and I actually just realized because I thought that the prospect they had gotten back for Biggio, I thought he was on the 40-man, but he's not actually. He's not on the 40-man.
All right.
That is Braden Fisher.
Yep.
So he's not on the 40-man right now. So I actually just counted. They're actually third. I think unless I'm miscounting, this includes Alek Manoah and all the guys on the IL, the 15-day IL, 10-day IL, 15-day IL for the pitchers. But it includes everyone. It includes Brian Servin. It includes Eric Swanson in the minors. It includes guys like Adam Macko and Paolo Espino and Hagen Danner and so on.
Mm-hmm.
There are 38 players on the 40-man right now.
So they have flexibility.
So they actually do have some flexibility there. So you don't have to actually cut anyone. So that's good to know. And then, of course, and this was a text from Megan in Waterloo, and this is going to happen at some point soon. Manoah's getting the surgery. He's going to be put on the 60-day. And when you're on the 60-day, you don't count towards the 40-man, right? So there you go.
Okay, so even that. So then they can add him to the 40-man. Still, obviously, if they choose to then make a move and add him to the main roster, they would need to subtract from the main roster.
The active roster, yes. The active roster would still need a move to clear up a spot for which, again, would... But that's a little easier, though,
it is
right?
Easier.
Because you can just option someone if you really have to. Yeah. You can option... You can't option Ernie Clement, but you could, in theory,
really
option... Yeah, and you probably... Maybe you don't, because he's been a little more consistent as of late. He had a rough stretch right before, but he's been showing a little more signs of life lately, even if he didn't play today. So, yeah, like, you could option an Addison Barger. You could option I mean, I don't think you would option a David Schneider, but you could option, you know...
objectively, show.
You know, someone else as well. Spencer Horwitz, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Addison Barger probably makes the most sense. If you're going to option a guy and you want to keep Clement, he probably makes the most sense from a position player standpoint.
Yeah, you're probably right. I was going to say, because objectively, doesn't Ernie Clement provide more utility than even, like, unless Joey Votto, for example, comes up and is mashing and hitting for power, because there's no positional versatility there. Like, there's certain things that, like, Ernie Clement can provide, and even Addison Barger, and we'll see, he's going to get an opportunity now, that I think there's maybe more utility to those guys being on the roster than a guy like Joey Votto. Because it's not just about, you know, it's not just about what they're doing at the plate, but if they give you something at the plate, they run the bases well, they can play multiple positions. Like, there's actual things that they do beyond just standing in the box and swinging. So if Joey Votto isn't, like, let's say Joey Votto comes up and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
He's fine. Let's say he hits 240 and you know, occasionally can drive the ball out of the ballpark or, you know, comes up with the occasional extra base hit, but he's not doing anything crazy. I just feel like those other guys... it might actually be beneficial to see more of them versus that at 40 years old, where there's limited upside to and potential to what he can bring to the table for your ball club. It also really, all of this that we're having this discussion, I think all of it is sort of dependent on where they are record wise and in the standings.
That's true, too.
That's it. Yeah. Like, if they're in a position where they feel like they're, instead of selling, they're trying to buy or they're trying to push forward towards a playoff spot, they probably favor a guy like Joey Votto. But if it's the opposite end of the spectrum, they're probably looking more at the Buffalo crew and saying, okay, let's see what these guys can do, and let's get them up here, and let's give them chances, and we'll go from there.
Before we take a quick break here, someone texted in to say, this is my first time hearing Daniele on Blue Jays Talk. he kind of sounds like Nick Wright. Is that a good? Do you consider that a good thing or a bad thing?
Wow, that is. Well, I mean, I respect Nick Wright a lot. Goes without saying.
Right.
That's a high bar, man. That's a high bar. I appreciate that. Who was it that texted that in?
Kevin. Kevin from
Kevin. Toronto. Thank you very much. That is a high bar, man. I don't know about that.
That's funny.
Woo!
Nick Wright's the guy who's like a. Unless I'm misremembering, is he the guy who's like a big Chiefs fan?
Yeah.
That's him, right?
Correct.
Okay. Do you like the Chiefs?
What?
The Chiefs?
No, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan.
Oh, that's right. You are a Bills fan.
Gosh, that is... Oh, my God. No.
I completely forgot.
No. Show, no.
Okay, well, you know what? On that note, let's take a break. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Still some time to give us a call, and you can text us as well. 590-590, name and location. The text line, still lots of text to get to on the people's text line, so certainly reach out in any way, shape, or form you like. Blue Jays blank the Guardians 5-0 today, and they set up the rubber match tomorrow. More Blue Jays talk after this show, and Daniele with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I mean, he's a valuable piece. You know, we talk about Trevor being pretty valuable with his flexibility, but I think, you know, today was nice because it allowed Bowden to throw, you know, the number of pitches that he did and keeps that length kind of built in for him. But the last two outings in particular, I think him just using all of his pitches, splitter in particular, has been really encouraging. And it just looks a little bit more like a starter, you know, with a starter's kind of arsenal. So that's what you kind of take of it, you know. Hopefully Yariel is good tomorrow and feels good afterwards, and we have a decision to make as to how we go forward.
That is John Schneider discussing the outing from Bowden Francis. Four innings, no runs allowed. He was great today as the Blue Jays used six relievers, including Bowden Francis, to shut down the Guardians. 5-0, they win to even this series at one game apiece, and tomorrow they will take on the Guardians once more in the rubber match right here at the Rogers Center. Daniele Franceschi is with me, Shoaib Ali, on Jays Talk, 590-590. Name and location, that's the people's text line. We're here for another 10 minutes or so. Daniele, I want to read you a couple more texts and tweets, actually, as well. At Daniele underscore media for Daniele, at SNS Ali with two L's for me. James tweets in simply just to say, winning is so much more fun than losing. I agree, James. I agree.
I would agree. I concur.
I see a text here from JJ in Toronto, an up-and-down season so far. Nice win today. Heading to the game tomorrow for my first Father's Day with my daughter.
Nice.
Fingers crossed today was the start of a string of wins. Get the season back on track. We can only hope that's what baseball is all about. And Dale in Nova Scotia, who I appreciate, texts pretty often. Dale says, pleasant surprise today with the offense and some good ABs with runners on. I think Spencer and Addison will be an emotional lift for the team, a fresh change in the bench's mindset. Take the series tomorrow, start the climb to playoff contention. Great pitching. Also, go Jays, go. And you know, we haven't talked about the offense really at all so far.
Yeah.
And the offense, I thought, played, you know, maybe you could have wanted a teensy bit more, be a little greedy, but five runs. I said this off the top, but they improved to 26-3, Daniele, when they score five or more runs. That is crazy.
It's a wonderful number.
That is absolutely nuts. One of those games I'm reasonably confident, well, it must have been because they lost this game and scored way more than five runs, but it was the game in Detroit where it was the back and forth at the end.
What was it, 14-11?
Yeah, that was the final score.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a game in New York where they lost. They lost 9-8, and that was, I think,
that's
Gosman's
right.
start where
that's
he was,
right.
The velo was a little up and down, and there was one more I'm blanking on, but either way, the team does not lose very often because of their pitching and defense when they score more than five runs or more. But in the second inning, so they continue their run as the highest scoring team in baseball in the second inning. They score three runs in the bottom of the second. Justin
yep.
Turner and Dalton Varsho gets it started with a walk and double down the line, respectively. Then you get George Springer RBI single, Addison Barger RBI single, which is the first RBI of his career, which is pretty cool, and Spencer Horwitz RBI single. So it was great to see them cash in some runners in scoring position, and there was also an IKF sack bunt to move the guys over a little
beautiful
bit
stuff.
Amidst another great day for IKF.
IKF was great today. Even could have had a three-hit day.
Show. Yeah.
Ends up 2-for-3, but he got robbed of a hit. Smacked it hard in his final at-bat down the towards third base, and a nice play was made to prevent him, to deny him.
Yeah, Schneeman.
What a grab. Boy, Schneeman.
What a grab from Schneeman.
To deny him of a three-hit day. But the second inning in particular, I wanted to hone in on that for a moment because, as you already mentioned, this team, for whatever reason, can't score in the first inning, but boy, oh boy, are they prolific in the second. I don't know why. They've scored 50 runs this season in the second inning. That's the most in Major League Baseball. That is crazy considering that this offense ranks in the bottom 10 of virtually every other key offensive category when it comes to the entirety of their season. Yet in the second inning, they are the greatest offense in the sport. Hang on to that one, Blue Jays fans. But what I really liked, there were two things in particular. One was the Addison Barger RBI single. And I liked it because the Jays opted to be very aggressive. They hit and run. They got Springer going in motion after his RBI single. He was running on that play, and it took the shortstop out of position, to which then created the hole for Addison Barger, who gets his first career RBI knock. That happens. Then they're like, okay, let's manufacture another. IKF lays down a bunt. Sack bunt, perfectly executed. Moves runners over. Like, just little things like that. And there was a great line I want to reference that Blair had earlier this week on a Jays talk. I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
Where he said, the Jays are playing small ball. They just don't know it yet. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's true. Why not embrace it then? And today they embraced it, and they manufactured some opportunities in that second inning. And it was very effective. I thought that was huge in sort of propelling this offense forward, because in all show, believe it or not, they only had one extra base hit.
Yeah.
It was Varsho's double.
Varsho's double, yeah.
That's it. Everything else was singles. And they got on base with walks and a couple hit by pitch. But it just felt like offense, the fact that they scored early, energized people. Like, the crowd was energized. There was a good vibe. There was a sense of energy and enthusiasm and positivity in the building. It's a beautiful thing when you score a run, show. Who knew it?
I wanted to talk to you about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa specifically. I wanted to hone in on him. So IKF has the RBI single in the fourth inning. He singles again in the sixth inning. He goes 2-for-3, his 14th multi-hit game of the season. So he has now recorded a hit in 18 of his last 23 games. In that stretch, 25 of 79. So it's a batting average of .316, four doubles, a triple, two home runs, 15 RBI, and an .833 OPS. That's phenomenal stuff.
Crazy.
From IKF. I just, like, I don't really have an issue with the sack bunt, because even though he has been swinging the bat well, it did help in that particular situation. And, you know, you talk about guys who can lay down sack bunts. Not everyone can do it as well as he can. Maybe a couple, maybe Varsho can as well, but there's not everyone can. So that's certainly a learned skill.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder, from an IKF standpoint, do you like where he is in the lineup in terms of batting order? Because right today he was batting eighth.
Mm-hmm.
Typically you see him bat that 7-8-9 spot. I have said before, I like him batting where he is, but I'm just curious to get your take on it.
Completely agree. He's not a top of the order bat, and nor should he be. That he's in the exact right, correct spot. Leave him there. Show, leave him there. I say this respectfully to him. Any offensive production you get from him, sorry, let me rephrase that, any damage you get from him offensively is a bonus. That's never been his game. He's on a hot stretch in an riding an absolute heater right now. Leave him where he is. He's comfortable down there. He knows his role. He works great at bats. Leave him. Let him be. That's it. Don't mess with it whatsoever. I'm completely with you. Just leave him in that lower third of the lineup. He's doing great work down there.
I do kind of like it because, and especially, it does to a certain extent depend on what you're getting from the other guys towards the bottom of the order. But, you know, we've seen Ernie Clement bat towards the bottom of the order a little bit. We've seen Kirk bat towards the bottom of the order a little bit. Those guys are both on the bench today. David Schneider, if he's not batting leadoff, he's batting somewhere near the top of the order. So I do kind of like having someone like IKF, especially if he's swinging the bat the way he's been swinging it, I like having him near the bottom of the order to help give it a little bit of pop to set the table for the top of the order.
Stabilizing.
And that's not going to happen every single time anyone's at the plate. That's the case for every single batter ever. But I do appreciate that, you know, you always get a mature, you don't see him swinging out of his shoes. You just get those kinds of ABs from IKF, which is something that, you know, we haven't seen for a large chunk of the season from a lot of guys. So maybe it's just more refreshing that way. But I do like that he hasn't really changed his approach, really, no matter how good or how poorly it's going for the rest of the team.
Excellent point. I do think I love the word you use there, Sho, mature, because that's something that at times this whole lineup as a whole lacks. And it's great when you have a guy like that who's a veteran, who's been in this league for a while, and we made a lot about the contract. There's been a lot of consternation about that. But to your point, the one thing he does very well is he consistently gives you very professional, mature at-bats, and that is a massive positive and a huge plus, especially given the way that the offense has looked the entire season.
Before we go, real quick, what are you expecting out of Berríos tomorrow?
Well, expecting more dominance. I really do. I really am. I feel like, you know, it's an opportunity to win a series, and you want him to look good. The thing with Berríos is, how does that sweeper look, right? It's about location with his fastball and then the sweeper. When his sweeper is working, Show, and it's got that arm side to glove side movement, he's dangerous. He's filthy. One of the best starters in the American League this season. So hopefully more of that tomorrow in the series finale against Cleveland.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Show Ali. Appreciate you guys being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers. Today is Wash for a Wish Day at participating Crown locations across the country. Every year, Crown centers across Canada hand wash vehicles for $10, with 100% of the proceeds going to the Make-A-Wish Foundation of Canada. Crown invites you to get your vehicle washed today and help make a difference for critically ill children across the nation. Find your participating local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele Franceschi, Ben Shulman, Caleb Joseph, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, I'm Show Ali. We are out of here. Jesse Rubinoff is in with me tomorrow to put a bow on the series for the rubber match. Jose Berríos, Ben Lively, enjoy the rest of your weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you later.